T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
You know, Hub, I think you hit a great point there.
Hub Arkish.
The Arkish family in pro football media journalism has been around almost as long as the game itself.
670 The Score's NFL Insider.
Hub, would you consider being the GM for the Chicago Bears?
George McCaskey, if you're listening, I'm waiting for the call.
Shaw Media and Pro Football Weekly.
Welcome to Danny Parkin's Bone to Pick with Hub Arkish, a weekly segment.
Oh, crap.
Hub Arkish?
Not getting better than this.
Hub Arkish with Parkins and Spiegel on 670 The Score.
And Hub joins us as he does every Tuesday at 4 o'clock on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Thank you for the time, as always. How are you doing today, Hub?
I am good. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. I'm thinking of topics for my column to be published in Pro Football Weekly.
Okay. You let me know when you're ready.
Okay. The brain is spinning. The bet has officially been won.
Whoa, that didn't sound like you're looking forward to it, Hub. I've never read anything that Danny has written. Do you have editors that could help him put this together, maybe?
Well, I mean, technically, my title is executive editor, so I suppose if he wants the help, I can give it to him, but I'm reasonably sure he doesn't want my input or my impact on the article. So, we made a bet. Danny won. Let's let him have some fun with it. And when it's ready, we'll have everybody take a look and judge
for
themselves.
This is delicious. I'm picturing Hub, like, late at night, angry that he's even sitting there with a red pen, just going through Danny's article, circling words and sending out corrections, faxing it to you in the morning.
You know, guys, Matt, something you need to understand here. I forgot about this bet 5 minutes after we made it. And so,
that makes one of us.
Other than the reminders that I get here, like I said, we made a bet. Danny won, and I'm curious to see what he comes up with.
I will put some time into it. I promise you I will take it seriously. I will get you some work, and I look forward to being a published author. This is very exciting. Do you
trust me, Danny? It's not all it's cracked up to be, but go ahead.
I will give up my day job.
Well,
don't worry.
Yeah. Maybe, Danny, if you play your cards right, it could lead to a radio career of sorts. 670.
It's possible. Who knows?
Yeah. Hey, Hub, you wrote that Matt Nagy needs to relinquish what exactly because he's got too much on its plate. Is it about the play calling and why, if it is that?
You know, guys, I've alluded to this on a number of occasions over the last year and a half or so. And yet, you know, Sunday night was the first time I thought that they quite possibly lost a game because of it. That 4th and 15 with 10 minutes to play, I just thought was inexcusable. And I've studied every angle of it. I've tried to figure out, you know, why you would do that. I can't come up with a reasonable answer. And then when I got to talk to him about it on Monday, from where I sat, he didn't have a great answer. And so to me, it's pretty simple. If he is a qualified NFL head coach, and I haven't ruled that out by any means, even though I know some have, I don't think that's really justified, although we're certainly still evaluating and trying to get the answer. If he is, he has to know that his number one responsibility as a head coach is to do whatever it takes to win the football game. And in that particular situation, it's do I go or do I not go? It's not what play am I going to call, you know? And as I tried to talk to him about it, he indicated that, yeah, he was focused on what play, and we had a play that we liked, and you're doing both at once. No, you can't be doing both at once, because if he wasn't distracted by what play he was going to call, I'd like to believe he would have known that, that his team had a much better chance to win the game if they convert a 47-yard field goal than going for a usually unmakeable 4th and 15. And so I've always said, to me, it's not so much about the plays he calls. It's about, he's got to decide, does he want to be the head coach and run the game and win football games, or does he want to be the best play caller in the league? I don't think he can be both.
Wow. Okay. Hub, I think it was the right decision.
Why doesn't that surprise me?
Okay, but in order, so they're down 13. There's 10 minutes and change left. It's a 47-yard attempt.
Mm-hmm.
They kick the field goal.
Mm-hmm.
They are still down two possessions.
Yes, they are.
They are then kicking. Okay,
but, well, they are down a touchdown and a field goal instead of two touchdowns.
Correct, but they still need to score twice.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, they need to stop the Rams twice or convert an onside kick.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They had stopped the Rams once all game.
That's not true. I got to go back and look, but that's not, we mean they stopped them once.
In terms of like a three and out, get the ball back.
Well, that's not the same as stop them. Okay, three and outs are different, but go ahead.
No,
you had 10 minutes left, Danny. You had 10 minutes left. They did not require a three and out in that spot to have a chance to win the game. But go ahead.
But they needed to get, I mean, how many punts did the Rams have? I'm looking at it right now. I think the Rams had one punt in the game. The Rams punted once. Rams punted one time. So they stopped them once. Now, end of half happened and kneel down at the end of the game happened. They didn't score every possession, mm-hmm. but one punt. So in 10 minutes, they would need to kick off, stop, score, kick off, stop, score. When they had stopped them once the entire game, I think that there's – and you convert 4th and 15 about 16% of the time. Obviously, making a 47-yard field goal is way higher than 16% of the time. But given how bad the Rams' defense was, and oh yeah, by the way, the next time the Rams got the ball, they drove right down the field and scored a touchdown anyway, I think it was exceedingly unlikely that their defense was going to be able to keep the Rams to zero more points the rest of the game.
Yeah, Dan, do you think there's any chance, and this is where we get into kind of the mental aspect and how players react, and we can't predict all this, but do you think it's possible that the reason the Rams drove down the field the way they did is because the Bears knew they just lost the game by failing on 4th and 15 with 10 minutes to play? Because I do.
Oh, okay. I mean,
the Rams did not do anything resembling that the entire game. That was the only long drive that they put together.
They scored on a 3-play, 80-yard drive to go up 7-0.
That's right. And I just said that 7-minute, 70-yard drive was the only long drive that they put together all game long, and I think it happened because at that point the Bears were done.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I guess it's an interesting one though, because the drive before was an 8-play 75-yard touchdown drive for the Rams. The drive before that was a 4-play 75-yard touchdown drive for the Rams. It was just, you know, 4th and 15 versus 47-yard field goal to be down 10. Like, I think the game was lost anyway. That the defense showed no ability. They gave up 8.5 yards per play if you remove the kneel downs from the game. Biggs had the stat. Worst defensive performance in terms of yards per play in 20 years for the Bears. I don't think there was any indication Sunday night they were slowing down the Rams.
Well, again, I'm not talking about indications here, and we can't really predict, you know, mentally what kind of edge they were at. But I can tell you again, when you just study the situations and the percentages, in the history of the game, that they clearly would have a better chance of winning with 10 minutes to play down 10 than 13. There's all kinds of stuff. Let's say you get the first touchdown, okay? And I don't know how long that's going to take. I don't know how long it takes you to stop the Rams, get the ball back, and score a touchdown. But let's say there's, three and a half minutes left in the game. At that point, let's say you get a stop with a minute 14 left to play. No matter where you get the football on the field, you've seen this 1,000 times, how long does it take to get in field goal range? 30, 40 seconds? That's quite a bit different from getting all the way down the field and scoring another touchdown. So, you know, you're basing your response, which I understand, I'm not arguing with you, on the likelihood based on the way they've played. I'm just basing mine on situational football. and assuming that all things are equal and, you know, that the two teams are competing, and it's clearly easier with 10 minutes to play to get a touchdown and a field goal than to get two touchdowns, going back to kind of what you're saying, which is based on what they'd done all night, there was no indication they were going to score another touchdown, let alone two. You know, but I'm just talking about the situation in the game and what you have to do and the chance that you have to give your players.
Hey, Hub, they've been trying to sell us on the Pat Mahomes, Alex Smith comp for Dalton and Fields. We've talked about it ad nauseum, how it is different. Well, now here we are, and it's different in practice than it was down there. Mahomes didn't play a snap until week 17. Now that Fields has seen the field for five plays, what are we looking at here in terms of possible expansion? One play here or there sure doesn't seem very, you know, should Fields get a whole series? Like, could we be seeing that direction where Fields gets a whole series to do something? Or are we going to see just more, you know, random plays here or there for Justin Fields?
You know, two things there, Matt. First of all, I don't think it's ever really been a comp, because even Matt Nagy would never try and sell that Andy Dalton is Alex Smith. You know, I mean, there was a totally different guy that these kids are trying to replace. And you know, Alex Smith was playing at a Pro Bowl level and was a far more successful veteran quarterback at that stage when Mahomes came along than what Dalton is for the Bears. Now, you know, that said, getting to your bigger point, I don't think anything's changed. I don't think anything's changed from day one. I think this has always been about who gives them the better chance to win games early, which I understand there's a debate about with some folks, but I believe that it's the veteran who knows what he's doing and managing the game if you have other good football players on the team. And then how long are you competitive? If the Bears, with Andy Dalton, can win games and stay in the playoff chase, then there is a reason to go slow with Justin Fields. If, you know, I mean, you could find out as soon as this Sunday. I don't think they'll make the switch this soon. But if they were to get knocked off by the Bengals, you know, and then you go to Cleveland and you get smoked, then, you know, what the hell? You know, I think everybody has a different attitude at that point, because you're willing to write off the season, which you assume that you're doing, going with a rookie quarterback. It may not prove to be true. But again, just based on 100 years of history, that's kind of the way it works out. And so the change could come very quickly. As far as are there going to be changes to the Fields package? I don't know. I was kind of disappointed in what the Fields package was Sunday night. Obviously, you know, the touchdown run is a play that clearly suits him. You wouldn't run it with Andy Dalton. It was a good call. It was a good time to put him in the game. The other four plays that they put him in for, I don't understand how his traits and abilities were likely to make those plays more effective than Dalton's. Again, I'm not criticizing. I'm just saying I don't get why those were the plays and those were the times that they put him out there. So that suggests that they're just doing this in certain game situations to get him that one play's worth of experience. And if that's the plan, then yeah, I would expect them to expand it. An entire series, now you're getting a little iffier, because now you're taking Dalton out of his game. You're changing the offense probably in midstream. I don't think that's something you really want to do. But, you know, I don't know what the game plan looks like.
In your experience, Hub, external pressure, like, how much of a factor does that have in these types of decisions? Because if they do lose to the Bengals or they are down, I mean, there were "We want Justin" chants in the crowd from Bears fans in L.A. I'm thinking that Sunday could be a pretty uncomfortable Soldier Field. I'm wondering if you think that could have any impact.
Well, you know, Danny, I'd only be guessing. I mean, I think I know Nagy a lot better than most, but I don't know him intimately. I don't know what's going on in his head. He's obviously stubborn. We know that, you know, and so that suggests that pressure isn't going to matter all that much. But, you know, there is something else unique about this game. This is Dalton's own old team. I mean, you know, he's going to want to go out there and do some good things. And his teammates, who, regardless of what anybody wants to pretend they know, really do like and respect him, are going to want to do it with him and for him. So, you know, I think there's a good chance that you're going to see a much better offensive performance, a better performance out of Dalton, hopefully a better game plan. I don't know if we're going to get into that or not, but I had real problems with some of what that was all about. And
go ahead. What were the problems?
Well, I'm not sure why you need an Olympic track team for wide receivers if you're not going to throw the ball more than 5 yards down the field. You know, another huge problem with 4th and 15, Danny, is when you've completed one pass of more than 11 yards in the first 50 minutes of the game, what gives you any indication there's a chance that you can even hit the 16%. We talked to Marquise Grissom today, Marquise Goodwin. Yeah, I know. At least I caught myself first this time.
Yeah.
I actually hadn't done it in a week or two, and I don't know why I keep doing it. But anyway, we talked to Marquise this morning.
Because you love baseball, Hub. It's okay.
I do love baseball. Somewhere I had it in the back of my head that he had had a cup of coffee with the Cubs, and obviously he didn't. Seven major league teams, but not them. At any rate, got to talk to Goodwin this morning, and he was questioned once by me, a couple times by a few others, as to his feelings about that game plan and not throwing the ball down the field. And he was really careful to say, I like whatever my coach does and tells me to do. And then he kind of backed into a question about the impact that Jalen Ramsey has on a game. And, you know, does it make it more difficult or easier for him when everything is packed in, within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage? And he said, well, you know, obviously it would help backing Ramsey off if we get down the field a little bit, or something to that effect. I'm paraphrasing. They picked their poison. Clearly the design of the game plan was to not let Aaron Donald dictate the outcome, and it worked. He really didn't dictate the outcome. Andy Dalton, I'm sure you guys, well, I don't know if you were listening to the TV broadcast, but they mentioned a few times that he got the ball out quicker than any quarterback in the league did all last season. That was what they were trying to do. But what that does is you can't, you know, hit your speed guys down the field. You can't open up the middle of the field to give yourself a crack at more 12 to 18 yard pass plays. So I just thought they were eerily, you know, lacking in any kind of attempt to do what they spent the whole offseason building a roster to do.
Well, first of all, Marquise Grissom went to spring training with the Cubs in 2006, so your mind is all right on that one in terms of where he went. He didn't make the team, but he was there in 2006. Look, Hub, as you're talking about the game plan, and we're talking about, you know, throwing fields out there for one play every once in a while, and just the whole scheme and, like, getting it out quick, I think Matt Nagy is starting to get to a place where it's obvious that he needs Justin Fields. Like he needs great players to make his vaunted system, which, of course, takes years for people to learn, remember? Even though everything has turned over a bunch. I think Nagy really needs great players, and at some point he's going to need Justin Fields. Are we headed towards that, where Nagy's going to realize that he needs this guy?
You know, again, Matt, I mean, we are clearly headed towards Justin Fields being the starting quarterback of the Bears at some point this season. And I think we all hope for a long time to come. But when we talk about, you know, Matt needing him there, we don't know if he can fulfill Matt's needs. We haven't seen that yet. The other reason for the game plan that I didn't get to is you didn't know where you were at with your offensive line going into the game, you know, and it actually came out probably exactly the way most of us expected. The interior of that offensive line is pretty good. They did play pretty well Sunday night. The tackles were an issue. Jermaine Ifedi had a few decent blocks, but he also missed on quite a bit. We saw Peters struggle early. He went down. Borum looked good for a few plays. He went down. Then you get to Elijah Wilkinson. That's the reason that ball was coming out as quick as it was. Is Justin Fields able to do that? If Justin Fields doesn't do that, is he going to give up big plays to the defense and take sacks? Or is he going to make mistakes and put the ball up for grabs? How is he going to react? Is he going to get hurt, which you don't want? So, these are all the reasons that you're in this situation that you're in. And I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all answer for it.
We're talking to Hub Arkish here, Parkins and Spiegel on The Score. Do you think it's in play, Hub, that – well, let me ask it this way. End of the season – Bears going to be a top half of the NFL defense, yes or no?
I think it's in play. You know, I mean, do I think it's going to happen? I'm not going to make predictions off of it. You know, guys, I'm actually sitting here finishing my column. I usually do all my grades and film study on Monday, but we were short-staffed yesterday with travel back, so I wrote a column. I'm doing the film study last night and today, and there's some good things on that film on both sides of the ball. And, you know, if you come back again to after that initial, you know, it was both a missed coverage and then a failure to touch him down on the Jefferson touchdown. From that point on, you know, they held the Rams twice in the red zone. And at the end of the first half, the defense hadn't played all that badly. And then you come back and you open the second half with another ridiculous blown coverage, and now you're chasing from behind. But there were some decent things, you know, from that defense. There were some good things on offense. But coming to the defense specifically, we also, everybody's ignoring that you were without two of your best players, Danny Trevathan and Eddie Goldman, you know, and they hope to get them back. So the missed coverages, the mental errors, the blown assignments are inexcusable for a veteran defense like that. I don't care if it's week one or week 17, and there's no positive way to spin that. But as Tayshawn Gibson was telling me a couple hours ago, it is so obvious and it was so bad that it's that fixable. And these are guys who that is not their history. So I think it's a big mistake to overreact to the defensive performance Sunday night. And yes, I do expect them to be a top half. I actually think there's a very good chance they're going to be a lot better than that. And that just is going to require a little more patience.
Hub Arkish, thank you, sir. We will talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Take care.
Thank you. That is Hub Arkish. You know, we didn't talk a lot about, dude, I don't even know if we mentioned the fourth. No, we did a little bit. The fourth and 15 decision on Bears Monday. So I guess that I like the spirited debate. I liked reasonable minds disagreeing about nonsense that is sports. What did you think? Did you have a problem with the? Would you have wanted Matt Nagy to kick the field goal or go for it on fourth and 15?
I wanted consistency. I ended up being so frustrated by the whole thing, and I ended up not believing they had a chance to win regardless of what they did, that it didn't feel as consequential to me.
Yeah, like they had lost the game before that. No question.
They had lost the game before that, and they'd shown such chaos to me. Going for it, no. I think it was. I think a field goal made a hell of a lot more sense if you're really trying to score points and play complementary football in that thing. But I don't believe that's what they were really trying to do. I'm so frustrated with Nagy right now that I keep going big picture. Like, and that's why I'm asking Hub, does he need Justin Fields? I think Nagy's getting exposed in a big way these days. So singular decisions like that lose their specificity and interest to me, frankly, in that way, you know?
I agree with you. I think the big picture is more relevant for the Bears, but when Hub uses it as like the jumping off point for, you know, he's got to be overwhelmed and change. I was right, by the way. I did it from memory, but then pulled up the box score as we were talking Hub. They stopped the Rams once all game.
Yeah, so banking on them to stop them is not.
And it was a three and out, and Hub's like, well, a three and out isn't. They literally, these were the Rams' drives. Touchdown, field goal, the three and out punt, the half ended, just a one play, you know, end of the half, kneel down. Mm-hmm. Touchdown, touchdown. So those are the Rams' drives leading to when the Bears went for it on 4th and 15, and they're down 27-14 with 10 minutes and change left to go. So if you've had the Rams for, if you remove the one play at the end of the half where they just kneeled it down, they had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. They had 6 drives, and they scored on 5 of the 6. Why would you think that when you are faced with a field goal to cut it from a 13-point deficit to a 10-point deficit, and then you have to give the ball back to the Rams? And remember, onside kick percentages, since they changed the rule and they don't allow you to do the run-up anymore, have plummeted league-wide. Onside kicks are very difficult to recover at this point in the NFL. Why in the world would you think you're going to stop the Rams twice when you've stopped them once all game and score twice when your offense has been pathetic all game? To me, the game was already lost, but the Bears were so bad defensively that it was actually more likely that if they would have converted the 4th and 15 and just kept the ball, that was their best path to winning the game, because then they only needed one stop to get the ball back and score another touchdown as opposed to two stops, because the defense was the bigger problem than the offense. As bad as the offense was at generating big plays, the defense was still the bigger problem. So I thought Matt Nagy made the right decision, but they had lost the game before then.
I think they're not good enough to warrant dissection on a specific play call. I think they haven't even reached the level. So look, I understand what you're saying completely with the logic of it, for sure. But
I try to explain.
I know,
logic.
I know.
Sorry about that.
I feel you. Hey, have you noticed Eddie Jackson's cereal, or Nick Chubb's cereal, or Alvin Kamara's cereal, or Josh Allen's cereal? Like, all these NFL guys, they got to be working with the same company, right? And everybody.
I don't think it's a coincidence.
Correct. That they all have cereals that have debuted at the same time and they're on promotional tours. Just got this email that Eddie Jackson's public appearance to promote his cereal has been changed and will be rescheduled for another time.
Mm.
We will update you as soon as we have a confirmed new date and time. If you were Eddie Jackson playing, yeah, exactly. If you were playing as you are, Tanny, with Al Michaels as a vessel for your apathy on my cereal point, but like if you were playing as Eddie Jackson was, would you want to go and be public and pump your cereal and have to answer a bunch of questions about, are you interested in tackling at all? Is that something you like?
No, but you know how it is.
Would you want to do that?
You know how it is, man. Like, Jason Hayward gets applauded when he goes into town. Eddie Jackson gets applauded when he goes into town.
Yeah, but Jason Hayward was building a sports complex in Austin and deserves to be applauded.
I'm saying Eddie Jackson is
telling you, I'm good enough to have a cereal. Eat this.
I'm saying if someone sees Eddie Jackson at Cut or Bavette's, Eddie Jackson gets applauded.
All right, how about Mariano's in Vernon Hills, where this was supposed to be?
I'm not sure. I saw something last night beyond the softball game that I think you would applaud, and I want it to happen more and more and more. It's next on The Score.
It's time. God bless all of you, and God bless football.
The Manning cast last night was incredible. Bottom of the hour brought to you by DuckDuckGo. If any of you don't know what it was or how it came about, every television network has been trying to get Peyton Manning to go into the booth from the moment he retired. And he's arguably the smartest person to ever play the quarterback position and have the Hall of Fame pedigree, right? Everyone knows, like, Ryan Fitzpatrick went to Harvard. But in terms of football smart, Peyton Manning is in a class of his own.
And Peyton Manning has established himself as a marketable pitch man, surprising comedy chops, like affable.
Successful SNL host.
Yes.
Yes.
He hits... He checks every box that you would want in your football analyst.
And so, but he doesn't
want that gig.
Doesn't want the gig, seems to dream of something bigger, or maybe not at all. Spiegs, I loved it last night. It was him and Eli.
I don't know if he wants to work, like I don't know, would you, like if you had to, would you want to bust your ass to be as good as those guys have to be on a top broadcast? This is a much more chill situation.
And I'm not even talking about broadcasting, like coaching or being a GM or team president or fronting an ownership group. Like I'm sure he'll do something in football in more of a capacity than his Peyton Places show and this type of broadcast. But I'm watching that last night, and first of all, I thought it was incredible. But at the beginning, it was Peyton and Eli focused, and the game was on a small screen. And it didn't work. And credit to the producer for changing the dimensions and putting the game on 80% of the screen, but making the decision of keeping Peyton and Eli's faces on it the whole time. Because
doesn't that, I'm sorry, Danny, but doesn't that, like, isn't that common sense? Like, we have seen this with Twitch, with watch-alongs, with other companies that we have, that you and I have done some work with in the past, right? Like these watch parties, there is a way to do this that this essentially is when you do it this way.
Yes, 100%. It was a mistake at the beginning. They quickly corrected it. But they could have just had them be like, you know, Steve Levy and Brian Greasy and Lewis Riddick in the broadcast, where you just hear the voices and you're totally watching the game. They kept them on camera the whole time. And Peyton Manning speaks, whenever there was a mistake or a mental error or he saw something come, he was running his hand through his hair. He was like, oh, exasperated. And just, the guy has no connection to the Raiders or the Ravens. And he was living and dying with everything. Like it's like like when Larry Bird was the coach of the Pacers. And he was like, you know, these guys just aren't able to do what I was able to do, and it was frustrating. Like, I think Peyton might be one of those guys who is so great and so smart that I'm not sure that he can deal with it. Great entertainer, was hilarious last night, but in terms of really getting in it, Uh-huh. I'm not sure that he's cut out for it, man, because he was living and dying with every play of a week one Monday Night Football game on ESPN2.
Yeah, there's a lot of great baseball managers or great baseball players who made terrible managers because they were like, just do it. No, you just do it. Everybody was right. Like, well, yeah, no, I'm not that good.
It's like when Barry Bonds was the Marlins hitting coach. Very briefly, right. If you remember that.
Yes, of course.
Ted Williams was the Washington Senators manager for like a half a year. And he's like, yeah, no, these guys aren't as good as me. It's very frustrating. I'll do something.
It was so humanizing. I was like, does he have 100K on this game? Like, is he like riding a bet? But it's just he loves football and he sees it so brilliantly. But I want to just play a couple of clips because some of the humor was great and the guests were great. Barkley, Russell Wilson, Travis Kelce. But the football dorkdom was just amazing.
I've always wanted to play John Gruden. This is what John Gruden is saying to Derek Carr in the headset. They're going, no huddle. Eli, they're going, Broncho right tight, shorty flash. I'll let you know. Call it.
All right, hey, guys, here we go. We got Broncho right tight, shorty flash on the freeze play. Freeze play. Ready, break.
Here we go. Hey, it's cover two. Run 58 freedom. 58 freedom.
Hey, let me get to my cadence here. I got to get a white 18.
I'm just so excited.
White 18. Hut. Hey, no one's moving. Hey, I see it's cover two. Hey, red, 58 freedom, red, 58 freedom. Down, said Hut.
There it is.
Just the back and forth, Eli busting his balls, like the brother style. The next one, Tanny, where he puts the helmet on.
Here we go. Be a lure on the weave here, right? One mid, trips right bunch. H settle, 51 scat, H weave, rail, Y line, can, three jet church. Blue right, 20, blue 20, easy. Can.
What's the can mean?
He just canned it right there. Those are two plays I just caught. This helmet doesn't fit.
Shocking that a helmet doesn't fit you. They didn't have a double XL helmet to fit that forehead.
All right. He called two plays in the huddle, right?
It was so great to see Peyton's brain, and he was going a million miles an hour at the start of it. Like, it slowed down, and it eased up and became more conversational as it goes. But to see Peyton's brain being able to, in real time, diagnose the defense while verbalizing the offense and communicating it and having a conversation with his brother, he's playing at a different – I think if he did it tomorrow, he'd be better than Tony Romo.
Could very well be the case.
It was amazing, man. Amazing.
It's interesting you say it that way because Romo came out this week and said, hey, I'm not just good at this because I show up. I do my work. Like, Romo had to come out and defend his work ethic and the effort he puts into it. You got to do some of that work. You got to put that work in. And I don't know if Peyton feels like that. This is such a natural for this to happen like this, isn't it? It's like we have seen the mega cast. And as you point out, the view of those is usually different, where they've got a room full of like eight people on the fun one. And there's a couple former players and they're all sitting there. And you either just see them with the thing small and they think you're doing it on the second screen, or they just show the game with them not even on there at all. This, with a big screen TV, I didn't get home until they tweaked all that stuff because I was at the very hot Odyssey Reader softball game, as you know, Danny. But I got home for the fourth quarter and Russell Wilson hanging with Peyton and Eli watching the craziness that was that fourth quarter in overtime. Just as three football fans who, oh, by the way, are elite quarterbacks, was awesome. And they had, at least two-thirds of the screen, which was plenty big enough in my living room for the game. I missed nothing.
Yeah, no, by the end, the game was the star. Sometimes there were too much, like, forced, produced, like, attempts at humor. Like, at the beginning with guests, you could tell they had, like, scripted questions to lead them in. And, like, they brought Russell Wilson on in a tie game in the fourth quarter and asked him about a throw to Tyler Lockett that happened in the noon slate on Sunday. And I was like, no, talk about the game. But they can work out all of those kinks. But the idea of just Peyton and Eli geeking out over football, with a football game going on,
yep.
I learned so much from that one broadcast last night. I thought it was great.
And this is why everybody's going to want to do it, is because it was very humanizing for Russell Wilson. He's just sitting there hanging out, wearing headphones because the kids are upstairs and he wants to be quiet. You know, and Russ has had some moments where he's come off like either a prima donna
a
or just kind of out of touch or a dork or whatever. that was a very chill media appearance and a good humanizing one for Russell Wilson last night. Were you watching late when those guys were calling out everything? Like when the Raiders came to the line being forced to try and get into the end zone.
The hard count?
Yeah. It's like, don't go with a hard count here. You don't want to throw off your own guys. And then there you go. And there's a false start on the Raiders and it screws up everything. They did that like three or four different times over the course of the fourth quarter and overtime. Just calling it out before it took place.
It was great. They're doing, I think, 10 of them this year. They will get better as they go. But I don't want it to get too polished. Like they would sometimes they just like ran into commercial breaks and it was fine.
Yeah,
and then they picked up the conversation. It was great.
Peyton got up when overtime started and said, "I'm not being paid for overtime. My contract isn't good for that," and just bailed. Yes, just chill. And I think you'll get more guests that way. You just want to come and hang out and be part of the party and don't feel like they got to be part of the bit.
And they didn't need the guests. To me, like the brotherly thing and the brilliance of them. It was good. I'm not saying it wasn't good, and the guests were good. But like to me, Peyton and Eli were absolutely enough. And
Eli's such a huckster, though, man. Like
I thought he was great.
He was? All right.
I thought he was great.
By the end, I was like, what's Eli bringing to the table exactly?
Oh, I thought he made fun of Peyton. I thought that at times he I had the same feeling of him. I thought he came across pretty smart at different times, like football smart in the broadcast. And just it was also not that you're taking much of a chance by putting Peyton Manning on TV to broadcast football, but it was different. It was
It was a
network taking an attempt at something, and I loved it.
Don't you think though we are going to get pale, lame ass imitations of this?
Of course,
from everybody.
And
you know, well, in the middle of the year,
yeah,
it's the McCourty brothers.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. The Perriman family is here. Let's see if Brashad gets into the game.
Kyle and Chris Long would be pretty good at it.
Well, there you go.
It's
there
Tiki
go.
And Tierney and Rondé.
Yeah, exactly.
Here it comes, baby. You know it's coming.
And their mom, Deborah.
Uh-huh.
But there's no harm in it. Like I every time that this has happened before, but admittedly it's normally on huge games. Like I don't want to turn off Fowler and Herb Street for the national championship for like a niche experimental broadcast. But for Raiders Ravens, I'm all about it.
Here's Johnny Gronkowski to talk about his brother Rob. Let's go. But you know, Martellus and Michael Bennett, do a Seattle game. Absolutely. Give me a Seattle Dallas game with Martellus and Michael. There's possibilities here.
Yeah. I thought it was great. I hope they do more of it. But yes, you didn't get as much of it because you were locked in to the softball game, which Tanny recapped brilliantly in his open. You'll hear in 15 minutes. It's Parkins and Spiegel on the Score.
Note to self, learn to play pool, then begin hustling. Don't just start hustling pool.
Oh, the top of the hour brought to you by DuckDuckGo. I still can't believe it is real, Spiegs. Norm MacDonald dead at the age of 61, 9-year battle with cancer, didn't tell anybody. I can't believe it.
Yeah, somebody told me earlier that he was on David Spade's TV show, like, a lot, like, last year and recently. So
yeah,
that's...
they did a panel, I think, with all the Weekend Update guys.
That was great.
Yeah,
that was...
Oh, wow, I didn't see that. I'd love to see that.
Yeah, that was Comedy Central. Spade did a late-night show for, like, a year, year and a half, maybe, and he would always just... It became like a running joke in his friend circles. They're like, how many of our favors is Spade going to call in to get us to come on this show?
That's the way to do it.
Something I forgot about earlier, too, was he did a set in New York like just as COVID hit. And it was just ridiculously morbid and very like prophetic in a lot of ways. But the room was packed. Basically, like, we shouldn't be here. But it's just like it was one of his. It's going to be one of the last times he's ever been seen on stage.
It was the Cellar, right?
Yeah. I don't know if it was the Cellar. It may have been Stand Up New York or something like that. But or even Caroline's. I don't remember where it was. But yeah, it was brutal. Before anyone knew what was going to happen over the next year and a half, and it's still happening.
Yeah, right. And it's ongoing. And
yeah, you know, it's like I love when guys push that boundary because that's totally what they're supposed to do, right? I felt bad. Remember when Gilbert Gottfried pushed it just a little bit too close to the event? What was it? Was that a hijacking or a plane that had gone down? And he went just a little little bit too soon.
How about like 4 months after 9/11 in that Office episode where Michael Scott said, I thought too soon for Arabs. I thought that'd be a little explosive, but balls in their court.
Jesus.
Yeah, yeah, that was funny.
Comedians going for the too soon joke, though, is the basis of the bit.
Yes.
That's why they're there.
They need to do it. So then we can talk about it, and even just talking about it lets us feel like we're sort of doing it, but really they're the ones.
Well, on the 20th anniversary of September 11th, I put out a thread of a bunch of stuff that had stuck with me over the years, and one of the tweets was about, you know, I did the Letterman monologue, the Jon Stewart monologue, the SNL monologue, and a lot of, you know, the SNL monologue is it's a weird one to watch. Like Rudy Giuliani's on stage, and he says to Lorne Michaels says, is it okay for us to be funny again?
Right.
And Giuliani comes back at him, why start now?
I remember that.
And that's the first joke that SNL tells after 9/11, after the first like 6 minutes, we're all serious with the NYPD and the firefighters and Paul Simon singing the song up on the stage. It's like, that's the first joke. And it's good. It can be cathartic to laugh at tragedy.
Yes.
Tragedy plus time equals comedy. And for Norm MacDonald, the time part was the least valuable.
The time part is what's up for grabs.
He sometimes was debatable on the time portion. Tanny's open on the Odyssey runner-up softball finish coming up. Plus, is Matt Nagy losing the locker room? We hear from Marquise Goodwin next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.